The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
For more than 240 years, between the best of us, the American ideal that we're all created equal, and the worst of us, the harsh reality that racism has long torn us apart. It's a battle that's never really over. To stand up against the poison of white supremacy, as I did my inaugural address, to single out as the most dangerous terrorist threat to our homeland is white supremacy. And I'm not saying this because I'm at a black HBCU. I say it wherever I go.
He says it wherever he goes. That's at, I think, Howard University, an all-black college. Joe Biden, the fake president there, preaching a message of hate and division. And, of course, for those of you that have followed the spirit of Antiochus since Barack Obama's first term back in 2009, you're very familiar with this, stirring up racial hatred and strife. And of course, you know who's behind it all. I'm not talking just about Barack Obama. The devil, of course, Ephesians 2:2, the prince of the power of the air. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on this rainy Monday morning, at least for those of us here in central Oklahoma. We've just been deluged with rain all weekend long, and of course, we had our commencement activities all through the weekend as well, or the graduation festivities, I guess I should say. But we really do need the rain here in central Oklahoma, so we're appreciative of that. Where to begin? I mean, if you contrast what Joe Biden was saying there at Howard University with our commencement, I delivered the commencement yesterday afternoon. We'll let you decide. We'll let you think about or comment on the contrast, as we talked to the students yesterday, those graduating at Armstrong College, about the importance of family, about the importance of the foundation of any stable and strong society. It starts in the home. It starts with building unity and love into that family sphere. Now, contrast it with what Joe Biden is out there stirring up: division, strife, hatred, racism, really. And as he said, he preaches it everywhere that he goes. It's really sad. When you think about these college graduates, they're around the age of 22, I guess, and they're sitting there, and that's the parting message that the fake president of the United States gives to them. It's really sad and tragic. And of course, it's like a ticking time bomb, really. And they're going to get their wish, these radical communists that want to see everything come crashing down. This is from Fox News on that address at Howard University. It says, President Biden was awarded an honorary doctorate degree from Howard University on Saturday for his analytical intellect and popularity on both sides. Those are direct quotes. Claims mocked by conservatives on Twitter and contradicted by recent polls. You can almost read through this and wonder if Howard University is mocking him. But certainly conservatives are on social media sites. Listen to this statement from his address on Saturday as well, clip two.
After no longer being vice president, I became a professor at the University of Pennsylvania for 4 years.
He became a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. He took in $1 million from Pennsylvania. That went into the Biden crime family. Never gave one lecture. Wasn't the professor of any course. But that's just the way he is. Out there lying about his past, his credentials. He gets the honorary degree from Howard. I guess he can start talking about being a professor at Howard University as well. This Fox News story says Dr. Wayne Frederick, the president of Howard University, introduced Biden with high praise at the school's 155th commencement on Saturday. It says, admired, this is quoting the president of Howard, admired for your sound analytical intellect and open embrace for all. He's a uniter, not a divider, says this president, the president of the university. Your popularity on both sides of the aisle. Can you believe this? These people are blind to what's right, just right there in front of their faces. His popularity? His popularity among Democrats is plummeting. Forget about Republicans. Popularity on both sides of the aisle, it says, of the United States led to your illustrious reputation and outstanding service of 36 years as a Democratic senator from Delaware, beginning at the tender age of 29. A career politician who's made tens of millions of dollars off of his political fame. This is another article here by Jonathan Turley. You know about him. He's a commentator at Fox News. And he's really someone that swings more to the left than to the right. But with respect to the legal system and the two-tiered standard of justice, you know, he's like Dershowitz, Alan Dershowitz. He can see the corruption. He can see the double standard. It says, this week, Byron Daniels... Well, the title here is America's State Media. The blackout on Biden corruption is truly Pulitzer-level stuff. And so he goes here in the intro of his piece, talks about when Byron Donalds, if you remember last Wednesday in that press conference that the Republicans held, Donalds was out there basically pleading with the media, saying, look, this is Pulitzer Prize-winning material here. If just one of you would go after the Biden family on these bribery schemes that we're revealing, but they won't do it. They won't do it. And Jonathan Turley explains why. He talks about the media and their response or lack thereof. He says the response was virtually immediate, despite showing 9 Biden family members allegedly receiving funds from corrupt figures in Romania, China, and other countries, the New Republic quickly ran a story headlined, Republicans finally admit they have no incriminating evidence on Joe Biden. You see, and then the New York Times headline said the same thing. They all march in lockstep with one another. The press conference reveals 9 Biden family members on the take from communist-backed companies in China, including Biden's nephew, his niece, and his grandchild. The grandchildren, being wired millions or tens of thousands from China, of all things, while Joe Biden was vice president. And the media, they're just yawning away. Oh, ho-hum. They don't have any incriminating evidence. So we'll just move on. And or not even cover the press conference in the case of MSNBC and CNN. They just ignore it. This is what they do. Turley says here, for many of us, it was otherworldly. A decade ago, when then Vice President Joe Biden was denouncing corruption in Romania and Ukraine and promising action by the United States, massive payments were flowing to his son, Hunter Biden, and a variety of family members, including Biden grandchildren. Unbelievable corruption. And it's been going on for years and years and years. And the regime media, Turley calls them the state media, they've just completely ignored it all along the way. Jim Comer, the House Republican, he was on with Maria Bartiromo on Sunday. Listen to what he had to say, clip 5.
9 of the 10 people that we've identified that have very good knowledge with respect to the Bidens, they're one of 3 things, Maria. They're either currently in court, they're currently in jail, or they're currently missing. They fear for their lives. Not only are the Biden lawyers and the Biden White House intimidating them, the media is trying to intimidate and discredit them.
the Biden crime family, and the media, see, they're all in on it, they're going after these witnesses that say they'll expose the crimes or add to the trail of evidence exposing the crimes. I mean, that's unbelievable. Just that statement in itself. They're on the run. They fear for their lives. I mean, this is the kind of thing that happens in a banana republic or some third world nation headed up by an authoritarian dictator. But no, no, it's happening right here in the United States of America. It says here, last year, this is Turley again, last year I wrote a column about how the media were preparing a difficult scandal implosion to protect the Bidens and themselves from the backlash from disclosures of this influence peddling operation. Listen to this. It's a powerful point that Turley makes. The brilliance of the Biden team was that it invested the media in this scandal at the outset by burying the laptop story as Russian disinformation before the election. You see, once the media goes all in on that lie, that big lie, as they like to say, they said, yeah. And of course, the 51 intel agents, all of them, they were in on it too. Spreading the propaganda, the media, the regime media, swallowing it, hook, line, sinker. And once they go along with it at the beginning, you see, they've got to continue with the big lie. Because as I've noted before on this show many times, they're not going to come out and repent. They're not going to come out and say, you know what, we got it wrong 2 years ago. It says here, the brilliance of the Biden team was that it invested the media in this scandal from the beginning. It says that was, of course, false, the Russian disinformation lie. But it took 2 years for most major media outlets to admit that the laptop was authentic. But the media then ignored what was on that authentic laptop. Hundreds of emails, detailed potentially criminal conduct, and raw influence peddling in foreign countries. They finally admit that the laptop's legit, but then they don't go and look at it. They just ignore the evidence. It says, when media outlets such as the New York Post confirmed the emails, the media then insisted that there was no corroboration of the influence peddling payments and no clear proof of criminal conduct. It says it entirely ignored the obvious corruption itself. You see, they just move from one denial to the next, and they don't look at the evidence of corruption itself. They won't examine the facts. They just say things like, there's no evidence. Does that sound familiar? That's what we heard coming out of 2020, the election steal. There's no evidence of fraud, they said. This is the way they operate. I mean, this is yet another sign or proof that what happened in 2020 was completely fraudulent, because this is the way the regime media operates, you see. They cover up crimes, and then they create crimes that aren't even there in order to take out their enemies. It says here, now that the House has released corroboration in actual money transfers linking many in the Biden family, the media is insisting that this is no scandal because there's not directly proof of payments to Joe Biden. So now it's okay, so his grandchild got payments from China, the CCP, but you know, Joe Biden himself, he didn't get any, did he? So this is how they cover for this crime family. It says here, putting aside that this is only the fourth month of an investigation, the media's demand of a direct payment to President Biden is laughably absurd. The payments were going to his family, but he was the object of the influence peddling. You see, he was vice president. He was the point man on the pivot to China, as I said last week. He was the point man with respect to Ukraine, now Romania, we see. And then his family members are getting all these payments from these oligarchs coming from Ukraine, coming from Romania, coming from China, Russia. The whole family, you see, compromised. And they're not alone. As I say, you know, a bigger point needs to be made. That at the time, Joe Biden was vice president. Of course, Barack Hussein Obama was president. He was in the Oval Office when Hunter and company were coming in and out of the White House for those 8 years. He saw it all. He approved of it all. It says here, the whole purpose of influence peddling to use family members as shields for corrupt officials. It says, instead of making a direct payment to a politician, which could be seen as a bribe, you can give millions to his or her spouse or children. See, this is a crime syndicate. I mean, it was well organized and set up. Remember, Bob Alinsky told us that they had to call him, you know, code names like the big guy or something else. Certainly don't print in your text or in your email. Don't write out Joe Biden. We'll just talk in code, because they were concealing the crime network that was headed up by the big guy, who is Joe Biden. Bob Alinsky said it was obvious. Everybody knew who we were talking about. And Hunter lamented in his communications that the big guy took too big of a cut. Hunter had to pay off his baby mamas and those things, his crack habit, his addiction to sex, all the prostitution rings, all those things. I mean, this is unbelievable that no one in the media would take an interest in this. And yet, this has been their way, and it goes way back. Turley even gets into the Walter Duranty, how that he was compromised. He was over there in Russia reporting on, you know, Russia crimes, I think it was, and covering it up, smoothing it over. And here he wins a Pulitzer Prize for his fraudulent reporting. That was something like 100 years ago. I forget the exact date on it. I don't want to read all the article. But it's the same spirit today. You see it everywhere. The ones that print lies, the ones that spew propaganda, they win the awards. And so Turley says, you know, Donald's, it was a great challenge. Hey, this is Pulitzer Prize winning material. But the thing of it is, they get their Pulitzers for printing lies, for being deceptive, for spewing propaganda, certainly not for telling the truth. Turley concludes here saying, today we are seeing a much more dangerous phenomenon. The coverage this week has all the markings of a state media. The consistent spin, the almost universal lack of details, the absurd distinctions. It is the blind side of our First Amendment, which addresses the classic use of state authority to coerce and control media. Listen to this little discussion that they had on Morning Joe just this morning as they talk about, you know, some of the fallout still from the disaster for CNN of that town hall last Wednesday night. This is over at MSNBC, and it's a Scarborough and Company talking with Joe Klein, clip 4.
Seems to me we have the criticism followed by the false choice, which was you can either hide your head in the sand or have events like the CNN town hall meeting. You say there's a middle ground. What is it?
Well, I think we have to be a lot smarter about how we handle this, and maybe a lot less politically correct. You know, Caitlin Collins is an excellent journalist, but it was like having Donald Trump interviewed by his daughter. I think it would be much more psychologically interesting if we had a father figure, because as you know, Joe, Fred Trump was the most important figure in Donald Trump's life, and he was an authoritarian. He was a tough guy. And, you know, we need to have someone interviewing Trump, and we need to be more authoritative when we interview him. We need to be able to say things like, you can't really believe that, can you? No one's done that yet. No one's done that in a long time.
There's their take, the regime media, the state media, after 7 years of relentlessly assaulting Donald Trump, all things Trump. And he says, you know, we need to put aside the 31-year-old women and get an authoritarian in there so that we can actually go after Donald Trump. I mean, they're not even trying to conceal their, and it's not even just bias, it's hatred, it's rage, it's obsession. They've impeached him twice. They created a Russian collusion hoax and went on with that for years. They're indicting him. And he comes out, Donald Trump, that is, and makes them look like fools last Wednesday and makes them look like the state media they are. And what's their response? Hey, we got to double down. We got to go after him harder. We've got to get a real dictator type personality in there to just pummel the man. It's amazing to watch, isn't it? So demonic. Turley concludes his piece by saying the media simply fails to see the story. Well, that's not exactly the case. They see it. They're just covering it up. It says here, of course, it can always look to the president. It can always look to the president for enlightenment. Just before his son received a massive transfer of money from one of the most corrupt figures in Romania. This goes back years again during the VP days. Biden explained to that country why corruption must remain everyone's focus. Listen to this. This is a quote from Biden. It's especially rich. Biden said at that time, corruption is a cancer that eats away at a citizen's faith in democracy. He said, corruption is just another form of tyranny. Well, it's not often that we agree with much of what Joe Biden says, but we can certainly agree on that point. Corruption is, in fact, another form of tyranny. Well, God has something to say about all this. He's already, I mean, we've pointed out already so many times, he's exposing this filth, this corruption. And Donald Trump will, one way or another, make his way back over the weekend. I forget what the event was. It was an event where General Mike Flynn was one of the guest speakers. And I guess during his speech, he holds up his iPhone, and he's on the phone, actually, with Donald Trump. And Trump had this to say to the audience through the phone connection. Clip three.
I will say, General Flynn, he's some general, he's some man. He took abuse like nobody could have handled, and he came out bigger, better, stronger than ever before. We love him. He's a leader. And you just stay wealthy and healthy and well and everything. I want you to have great lives in general. You just have to stay healthy because we're bringing you back. We're going to bring you back.
My wife's going crazy.
Well, we're proud of you, General. I'll tell you what. And I knew it from day one. You're really somebody very special. And when I hear that applause in the audience, when I just say a few nice things, I could go on for a long time about you. But we're very proud of you. And, you know, we're leading the polls by a lot. We just get a poll that we're leading the Republican opponent by 30 points in Florida, which is pretty good. And we're leading Biden. We're leading Biden by 11 points. We're leading everybody. And it's less than a year and a half now, and we will make America great again. We'll turn around our country. We'll put America first. We're going to have strong borders. We're going to have cheap energy. We're going to have everything.
Now, as you know, General Flynn, and this is all brought out in America Under Attack, but he was the one that Obama went after first. He was going to come in as the national security advisor to the president, President Trump, and they took him out. Obama used his people, Comey and company, to take him out right away, early on in the administration, because they knew he would expose them. He knew they would. Obama knew that Flynn would expose their crimes. And here is Donald Trump again. He said it a couple, 3 weeks ago, and then again over this weekend. Just stay healthy. Stay healthy, Michael Flynn, and you're going to be coming back. You know that has to strike fear in the hearts of Joe Obama and all of their acolytes. Just one last comment before we break away and prepare for the commencement address that we had yesterday in beautiful Armstrong Auditorium. We had a program on Friday, The Invasion of America, about the illegal immigration and how it's killing the United States. And it was posted on this Rumble channel, LFATV. We've done a little promotion work. There's a podcast there, I guess, that mentions our program and that we have contributed to their missions, which isn't entirely the case. We're paying advertising, basically. And I think it's a religious channel that has some conservative news as well. But anyway, they posted our Friday program. I guess that's part of the advertising package. Every Friday show goes up on their stream. And or on their feed, I guess it is. And it's gotten almost 9,000 views. So we're certainly getting more attention on the Rumble channel, as I've told you many times. We've only just started there after the last month or two. So you can get to the live stream through our website, trumpetdaily.com, but you can also get to it at our Rumble channel. That would be the Trumpet Daily. Just search for it at the Rumble website. All right, so we'll take a quick break. When we come back, you'll be able to hear the commencement address in its entirety from just yesterday afternoon. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to all of the family and friends in attendance here. We've had some special guests show up right as the travel ban lifted, so it's exciting to see some of our international students blessed with family and friends from abroad. We know there's lots of people listening or viewing online as well, so it is a worldwide family that's coming together for special events such as this, and it really is special. The music right there was very powerful, and we appreciate all that the Malones and the Jenkins put into the music program for all of these formal settings. And we're grateful, too, for our students. Mr. Lorenz's remarks there early on really did set the tone, I think, beautifully for today's ceremony. 55 years ago, Herbert Armstrong wrote that marriages are not only breaking down all around us, the very usefulness and desirability of the custom is being seriously questioned. He said, "Is marriage on the way out after all these generations and centuries? Is home and family life to disappear from human society?" So he wrote this in 1968. It's in a booklet titled, Why Marriage Soon Obsolete? He was asking these kinds of questions 55 years ago. There he was in 1968 warning that marriage and family were on the way down and out. We often point out, we have a booklet that goes by that title, that he was right. He was right, and we try to draw attention to this every time or every chance that we have. My father, the chancellor of Armstrong College, he's taught, again, the very same things regarding marriage and family in the decades that the Philadelphia Church has been around. For decades, even as so many conservatives and everyday Americans were paying no attention at all to marriage and family, or at least the preservation of it, we were talking about the conspiracy against family, the conspiracy against fatherhood. You can go back and look at some of my father's earliest Key of David programs, and again, over and over, he wrote about marriage coming under attack. He wrote about the conspiracy against fatherhood. You think about these words, obsolete and conspiracy. Those words perfectly describe the state of marriage and family today. There was a recent Forbes article that said the 1950s notion of the nuclear family with the man as the head of the household is no more. It just doesn't exist anymore, said Forbes. We look around our society today, the marriage rate is in sharp decline, and those who marry are putting it off longer and longer. The average age for men to marry last year was 32, and for women, it was 30. Not that there's anything wrong to marry later in life, but that's just a trend that sort of is across
the board these days. And of course, once people are married, there's a 50% chance that it will end in divorce. 50%. And then after that, people that remarry or marry a second time, there's a 67% chance of divorce. And if they divorce and marry a third time, there's a 73% chance of divorcing. So they're obviously not learning the lessons. I mentioned on the radio program recently, Rupert Murdoch was preparing for his fifth marriage earlier this year. He broke it off because she was too religious. Five marriages. He's got billions of dollars, but he can't seem to make it work. He can't seem to live the right way. Very sad. Divorce is so common that many people see it as normal. Society has fully accepted it. Many even view divorce as something that's morally acceptable. It's the same with many sex sins like fornication, adultery, pornography. People have come to view this as just the way it is. It's just normal human behavior. Out of wedlock childbirth is commonplace. In 1980, 18% of all women in the U.S. who gave birth were unmarried. That's 40-some years ago. As of 2021, it's now 40%. So it's moving toward half of all children born are born out of wedlock. You look at some of the other tragedies of our time today with respect to the family. In the U.S., there's something like 1,500 to 2,500 abortions every day, every single day. Thousands of babies are being aborted worldwide each year. I had to check and double check and triple check this stat, because it's something like 70 million abortions per year around the world. That's a population greater than the UK every single year. Most children, if they grow up in a family, they're growing up in one that's broken or else it's horribly dysfunctional. It's all around us, and of course, this is exactly the way Satan wants for it to be. Satan is the author. He is the father of dysfunctional marriages and families. Mr. Armstrong wrote in Missing Dimension and Sex, he says, since it is a basic truism that a solid family structure is the foundational bulwark of any stable and permanent society, this fact means only one thing. Civilization as we know it is on the way down and out. Unless that great unseen strong hand from someplace soon intervenes to save today's sick society. Society is sick because family is sick, because marriage is sick, because of family breakdown. Mr. Armstrong wrote elsewhere, he said, if family life breaks down, all civilization will break down and go into anarchy. And that's what we're seeing, particularly in our nation today. We're seeing it descend into anarchy. Some of these young people causing trouble and problems and committing acts of crime and carrying out criminal behavior, they're products of a dysfunctional family. So many of them are fatherless. In 1973, Mr. Armstrong said, the very foundation of any nation's solidarity, strength, and power is a solid and stable family structure. It says when a nation's family life breaks down, that nation is disintegrating, committing national suicide. It's easy to look at all the problems in America and just say that it's political. If we just get the right political candidate in there, it'll solve everything. But the problems, as you see, they go much deeper than that. We had a trumpet issue in February about America going the way of Rome, and there's quite a lot of content in that issue about the family breakdown in Rome anciently. My father said, this is a towering lesson of history. A nation's success or failure hinges on the strength or weakness of its families. That's what ancient Rome teaches us, and of course, it's what God tells us in Isaiah 3 as well. There was a commencement address a week ago. It was, I think he kicks for the Kansas City Chiefs. Evidently, he kicked two game winners this year, so he's been right at the peak of success, the way the world would view it. He makes a lot of money, but he was, I'm not sure where he was speaking, but he was telling these graduates that, you know, you look around and you see all these problems in our society. He talked about how that, you know, we've got all this technology, we're more connected than ever before, and yet young adults feel a sense of loneliness and anxiety and depression like never before. He says, I'm not sure the root of this, so they don't understand how to fix these problems, but they see the problems, some of them. I'm not sure the root of this, but at least I can offer one controversial antidote that I believe will have a lasting impact for generations to come. He said, get married and start a family. It reminded me of a statement Tucker Carlson made last year when he gave advice to young people. He said, get married, you know, choose wisely, don't overthink it, but get married and then have more babies than you can afford. I don't know if we'd give that advice. I mean, 1 Timothy 5:8 says that you do have to provide for all those children, but you can certainly pray for God to bless you with the means to have lots of babies. But it, going back to what the kicker said, I can offer one controversial antidote. It's controversial to marry and have a family. It's now controversial, I think some would say revolutionary, to say that marriage, the marriage bond, is a good thing. The marriage bond between a man and a woman is a good thing. And family living, children growing up in that well-adjusted family, the traditional family, that's a good thing. That's seen as controversial. This is where failing to understand marriage and family leads. This is where taking marriage and family for granted ends up. And now that forces against marriage and family are so powerful in this world, it takes great courage just to stand up for the traditional family. And these are people, in the case of the kicker and Tucker and a few others, they don't even understand why marriage and family, that God instituted it. They don't understand all the laws of marriage and family. They may be practicing a few of them. I mean, they probably are if their marriages and their families are intact. But the point that I want to make is that Armstrong College, and of course the late educator, Herbert W. Armstrong, it teaches these students over here what marriage is, why it exists, where it came from, and what are the laws that govern a happy marriage, a happy marriage and family. Mr. Armstrong said this about Ambassador College. Of course, he established the vision for AC today way back in the 1940s with Ambassador College. He says, at AC, students find the true values. They learn the real purpose of human life. Life takes on true meaning. Emphasis is upon character building. Students learn not merely how to earn a living, but how to live. This is the missing dimension in education. This is what's missing in the universities and colleges of today. They don't teach students how to live. They just teach them how to earn a living. And in some cases, they don't even do that. More and more, it's just propaganda. Communist propaganda at that. Anti-family propaganda. It says here, students learn not merely how to earn a living, but how to live. Students acquire a well-rounded, broadening, balanced education. There's not only mind development, but also that of personality, true culture, poise, and emotional maturity. Mr. Armstrong taught us that the knowledge of how to live, it really should be the very first interest that you have in life. How can I organize my life God's way? How can I set up my marriage and my family the way God says to? This is not the first concern of your typical graduate today, not at all. But from God's college, it's very different. You can dig, I don't have too much time, but you could drill further down into this subject and see where, from Mr. Armstrong's writings, college students were also taught the two spheres of education with respect to how to live. You have the campus sphere, which you experience here every day, and now we have the academy program, which prepares you for the college training. But then Mr. Armstrong also said there's the home and the family sphere, and these two are joined together. Because education, true education, starts in the home before that little tot even goes off to kindergarten or first grade. And now here you graduates are in a perfect position, not perfect, I guess, but a really good position to go and start. Quite unlike some of your parents or maybe grandparents who didn't have that ideal start, equipped with, as we heard in the prayer, salvation is education. Now, you'll certainly need to retain an attitude that is humble and teachable, because we all still have so much to learn. But what a blessing it is to come into a godly environment and to get off to a godly start. In Principles of Living, you students will remember this, I mention every year just how unique. It's not just the instruction, and I'm not certainly suggesting that all of the instructors are at that level of perfection yet that we're aiming for, but it's not just the instruction you're getting in class, it's also the environment, and many of you visitors have commented on just how wonderful the environment is here on campus, even when we're being drenched with rain. It's still beautiful. It's still peaceful. It's still safe. It's still uplifting. It's still a very happy, joyous place. And there's a reason for that. I don't have time to get into all the reasons, but coming back to what I tell the students and principals, you come into this environment where most of your instructors are married family men, and then the few courses that are headed up by women, the home ec department and the nutrition and that sort of thing, they're married family women, the mothers that just stood up a moment ago. That is controversial in this world. That is unusual in this world. Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1964, the college, he had had enough years behind him. Now we've got even more in this era that we're in, 22 years of college, 22 years of school at AC. He made this remark 15 years in to the AC, the development of the AC program. He said, since the establishment of this Principles of Living course beginning in 1949, including classes in general family relations and child rearing, hundreds of students have married who previously had taken this course. There has not been one single divorce. How about that? So he had a sampling there, a sampling site, and it started very small. You heard about it's later in my notes. You didn't hear about it. We've graduated, I think, 360 students over the years. So that's not very much. I mean, there's plenty of colleges that graduate that and a lot more every single year. It's a mustard seed beginning, but you get 15, 20 years into it, and there's the occasional tragedy that we're free moral agents. You can, 5 years down the road, you could conceivably walk away from this. But those that are steadfast and remain and continue to apply these laws that govern a happy marriage and family, all you have to do is look at the fruits, as Jesus told us to do. And when you start projecting ahead generationally, you get a pretty good idea of just how God is going to transform the world in the right way, transform the world in the wonderful world tomorrow. I was talking this morning to a family who was commenting on coming out of dysfunction, coming into God's church, and coming out of a very dysfunctional family in the world. It was what they knew. And that's the beauty of God's family. When you come out of this world and all of this family dysfunction, all of this lawlessness, it's descending now to anarchy, as I say. When you come out of it, you can put away the ways of this world and set the family on a right foundation. I've mentioned the example before in my own family. Of course, if you look at those wonderful fruits of the Worldwide Church of God that Mr. Armstrong spoke of in 1964, it didn't take long, did it? 2 decades. And that church basically became a broken home. That church was split apart by divorce. That church became full of family dysfunction in the spiritual sense. And really, when God set out to raise the ruins of that work established through Mr. Armstrong, I mean, it was from the beginning, it was a family operation. It started with 4 families, and it's been a family operation since, really, in the spiritual sense, for sure, but even in the physical sense now, you see the second and third generation coming up in the Philadelphia Church of God. I'm old enough to remember some of your parents that not didn't come to AC, but they went to PYCs back in the 90s. Pretty soon, we're not that far away from some of you graduates or the graduates before you sending their students, their children, to Armstrong College as freshmen. I don't know how far away we are from that, but it's going to come soon. Anyway, coming back to the family operation, I've mentioned before the example of my grandmother and just how a wonderful woman she was, a very noble woman. She died in the same year that I married my wife, back in 1997, and she came into the Worldwide Church of God back in the mid-1950s. She started listening to Mr. Armstrong. In fact, it was her abusive husband, alcoholic husband, my grandfather, that heard Mr. Armstrong first. They both came into the church together, actually, but with him, it didn't take. My grandfather, he thought coming into the church would sort of fix all of his personal problems. He didn't make the changes. My grandmother did. So she stayed the course. And of course, when my grandfather went bad spiritually, he became very hostile. And then my grandmother had to really fight against a lot of hostility coming from her children, including my father, who's sitting right over there. How about that? He resisted initially, left the house in part because of his abusive father. He left the house when he was 18. He went out and wanted to try to make his own way. And after a couple of years, he was just miserable. And he started to wonder if maybe his mother was onto something with studying Mr. Armstrong's literature and listening to his radio program. So he came into God's church, I think it was back in 1961, if I'm not mistaken. And right away, he saw Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, as a father figure. Right away, he came into a solid family structure. And it was like an anchor for him. My mom came out of a dysfunctional family. She came out of a divorced family, which for the 1950s was very unusual. Not a lot of divorce back then. There is today, of course. And she had a lot of stepdads that were pretty bad. Before she died, she talked about some stability that she had in her life thanks to a really solid family by worldly standards, a solid family that lived next door to her. She became aware of the church, came in at the age of 19, and she married my father not that long after that. And of course, she's not here to tell you now, but my father, I'm sure, would tell you that even with a very strong mother in his case, and with a strong spiritual father figure, it was still very difficult, very challenging to just set up and establish the family, their family, God's way. And then you fast forward into the story, and you know, my sister came along in 1967. I was born in 1970, just a couple years after that that booklet came out, Why Marriage Soon Obsolete. And we both grew up in the church, and we both went to AC. My sister was able to finish AC there, and I just went for three semesters because of the split in the church. But the wonderful blessings that were given to me growing up in the church in the 1980s in particular, all those YOU activities and then later AC, the split in the church was obviously a pretty big trial, a jolt. But then I look at me, I look at my wife, who is a second generation Christian, and as I say, we met in 1995 and married in 1997. We didn't know there was going to be an AC down the road. We hoped there would be. We didn't know how much time there would be left before Christ returned to this earth. But a lot has happened since our marriage 26 years ago. But I've been here all through the AC experience for you young people. I think it's helped to keep me young in some respects. My body has betrayed me somewhat, but it's wonderful to work with all of you. It's wonderful to go through Principles of Living every single year. I never get tired of it. And I want to leave you with some controversial advice today. You graduates, I'd like to see you go off and get married and have lots of babies. I'm talking to the seniors, by the way. Don't get your hopes up, Nick. My father wrote in 2017, he said, "The strength of the nation comes from the strength of the family, and the strength of the family comes from obeying the one book that defines family, the Holy Bible." It's really not that complicated, it's just difficult to put it all into practice, because we're going against a lot of pulls in this world, coming from the devil himself, and then, of course, our own carnal impulses. Mr. Armstrong wrote in his autobiography, he said, "No phase of any man's life is more important or has greater bearing on his future success or failure than the romantic experiences and their culmination in marriage. The same is true, conversely, in the lives of girls who have reached the dating age." Few young people today realize the seriousness of this phase of life. Proper dating has become virtually a lost art in America. Young people today, it seems, do not know how to date. Most have little or no conception of the nature of true love or the meaning and the responsibility of marriage. They are men and women physically, but they are still children emotionally. You have a responsibility, just going back to the second sphere, you know, you've got the college sphere and you've got the family sphere, but you have a responsibility to go on and to build a family for God and to build the family of God. This is a vision, as Amos 9, the last few verses, brings out. It's a vision that stretches right into God's kingdom. But in the immediate future, I mean, what a wonderful blessing and benefit it is to even the church, the strength and the stability of the church, when you build a physical family God's way. We have three marriages coming up right here in Edmond over the next 7 weeks. That's a lot of marrying for us. And if I'm not mistaken, I think all six of these newlyweds will have completed 4 years, or did complete 4 years of college. So that's 24 years of that first sphere, and now they venture off and start that second sphere with their own marriage and family. That's a lot of training. And just think of the strength and the stability those new marriages, those three marriages, represent for the health, the strength, and the nourishment of God's church, of God's family, and eventually the whole world.